It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And that's why in Soviet Russia, car drives you.
I don't think that's true.
What a country. Did you ever see that show?
No, I didn't.
Did you know of the existence of that show?
Yes.
Because I feel like it was not a popular or long-lived show.
I don't think it was, but I never watched it. But yeah, I knew it existed.
I saw it, and I, well...
But he was fairly well-known before the show.
His bit was fairly... No, that was his big dream.
Actually,
was,
I think...
Because it wasn't... Technically, it was an ensemble show, but they made it because of him.
I think he had, like, segments on other shows.
Yeah, no, he'd been around forever. Because I remember, even as a kid, I knew exactly who that was when I discovered the show, which was at random. For those who don't know, there was a show called What a Country that was... it might have gotten two seasons, I don't know. That was a show about basically an English class for a group of immigrants. Except it was more than that. It was supposed to be like an immersion or integration into the culture thing or whatever. They had a teacher who... help them learn English and help them, in his off time, would help them, you know, learn how to be good Americans and stuff like that. And it was mostly a vehicle for Yakov Smirnov, who just played Yakov, the Russian immigrant. And yeah, I watched it for a while. And of course, as a kid, well, let's be honest, as adult, this probably stems from one of those racist parts of me that we all have and we can't get away from. Accents in general, I find them amusing. Just all sorts of accents. So, which is why I frequently break into them, even though I do them badly and they all basically turn into Inigo Montoya. or Old Jewish Lady. That's the other one. Those are my two accents. And so that show, which just had tons of accents, you know, was... I thought it was hilarious, regardless of what they were saying.
Do you think his humor... kind of falls in the same genre, if you will, as you're a redneck if you know that culturally oriented.
Yeah, I feel like there's a little difference there because to us it probably does because I don't want to speak for you, but I assume you don't relate to the if you're a redneck jokes. So for the most part, the humor one could get is. That other people, these hypothetical people, do these silly things.
Well, I mean, I certainly live in a part of the country where people who do relate to those things live, you know, and some of them apply to our household.
Then you can pull that to a degree if you're like, yeah, that's funny. That's making fun of me, and I get it. I'm funny, you know, as opposed to yeah, there are dumb people like that. And that's hilarious, which is where I take those jokes because I'm an elitist bastard. whereas with Yakov Smirnov's stuff, it was very much the latter. I mean, I don't think
there
was any...
Well, yeah, you're making fun of the Soviet Union.
Yes,
especially.
Exactly. Soviets are hilarious.
Yeah, Soviets. More than Russians, Soviets.
Yeah. Well, back then, you know, it was interchangeable.
Yeah, I suppose.
In our culture, in terms of vernacular,
sure,
it was interchangeable.
Sure, right.
And so, yeah, it was much more, and I feel like it was just very dehumanizing. I mean, I got to be honest, I'm not super familiar with all of his material. I know the base concepts, and I know certain jokes and certain moments from that show. But I feel like it was more, like, you could have done it as, here's a guy from Middle Earth that has immigrated here, and could do the same jokes,
but,
you know.
But that's what I'm saying, it's not just in terms of the... All of the jokes were culturally directed, but that they had a set format.
Yeah.
You know, there's like, you know, you're a redneck if that's the format.
Yes, and then the other one was, It was the same thing the Sphinx did in the Mystery Men movie. You'd say a thing and then say it right. The other way.
And maybe say, what a country afterwards.
What a country.
Yeah.
I remember two things I remember about that show. There was some episode in which the teacher was getting like birthday presents or something, and Yakov brought him a roll of toilet paper. And the teacher took it and said, oh, thank you, and it's 2-ply. And he says, in Soviet Russia, we don't even have 1-ply. We use Pravda. And then the laugh track kicked in. And then he said, it's better than reading it. It was so many years later before I found out what the fuck Pravda was.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the
newspaper.
The party's newspaper. Yeah, yeah, the yeah. Government newspaper in the Soviet Union. And then the other thing I remember is an entire episode where it's about Yakov and he gets his first credit card.
Mm.
And it's about going, because he was just buying everything, and he's like, I just have to make little payments. And they basically ended up having a sort of credit card intervention before concern about credit or interventions had been invented. So I guess, you know, it's kind of a front runner there. But, yeah, those are the only things I remember about the show. So we started a podcast like 5 minutes ago or more, maybe, you know. Hello, everyone. Welcome, after 6 minutes, to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that can only be defeated by one pure of heart.
As far as we know.
Yeah, according to the legends.
Yeah.
I'm Tony.
And I'm William. And this is episode 268.
Good man. Okay, before we talk about how this show works, I just want to say, it has come up, Keanu is voicing Keanu in Keanu, and I am super excited. Even though I'm going to have to wait another week to see it.
Okay.
For those of you who can't parse that out, like I'm assuming William can't, there is a movie that comes out tomorrow.
I know about that movie.
With Key and Peele, called Keanu.
It's a kitten, a little cat.
It is about a kitten that they lose and try and get back and stuff. The kitten's name is Keanu.
Mm-hmm.
It has been since confirmed that in a dream sequence in that kitten speaks, and Keanu Reeves does the voice of the kitten. And I'm super excited about that. All right. Anyway, for those of you just joining us, seriously, I know we're almost as confused as you are at this point. Here's how the show works, sort of. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people like yourselves, mostly like coffee, but also like other people, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, topics, comments, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. We, its enormous servants. You guys can't see us. You don't know how big we are.
Oh, I thought it meant the enormity of our servitude.
Oh, yeah, no. Not a thing.
Okay.
Reach into the hat, draw out note cards at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour, that's the show. So welcome. How was your week?
Well, it was good.
It's called the scratching post. Cats use it to sharpen their claws.
Doing anything worth really talking about. Just working on my projects, and, you know, we're keeping up with the TV shows we're normally keeping up with.
You just don't want to say anything because you're hoping I'll talk about my book.
I am hoping you'll talk about that. The season of Bates Motel is really good.
Is it? I was pondering. In a couple of weeks, in fact, we're doing double duty tonight, guys. We're doing two episodes because I have to take my wife to a place where other people will take her away. She's road tripping with her sister, and they're going to go out for a week to help their parents, who now own a beach house in Virginia Beach that they rent out, and they're going to, like, make it all nice now that they've taken possession. So they're going to be doing that for a week, so I'm going to be on my own, and I thought about maybe binge-watching Bates. Probably won't happen, but who knows?
Well, I just keep thinking that you'd like it, but then maybe you'll watch it and hate it. I don't know. But
I assume that's what I'm going to tell you.
We really like it, and this season's really good. It's the penultimate season, which means, you know, next season.
Oh, they already know? I like that.
Yeah. So.
I like a show that actually has a limited time.
We watch Vikings also. I don't know.
Oh, really?
If I've ever mentioned that.
No, you didn't.
My wife's heritage is English and German. And some of the German is like actual Viking German.
Mm.
And a lot of the English might be too, because her English heritage is heavily Saxon, you know.
Mm.
So her family kind of gets into the whole Viking thing. And so we started watching it some time ago. It's okay. Have you ever watched it?
No. To my mind, it is all of those historic shows with boobs, except it doesn't have the boobs because it's like A&E or something, right? Yeah, but to me, it's, you know, it's Game of Thrones, it's Borgias, it's Black Sails or whatever. This one they're Viking themed and without the boobs.
All of those are the same. Game of Thrones doesn't even pretend to be real.
No, but it's a period piece.
Oh, so you looking left out thing.
Tudors is in there. Oh, I left out a ton of them.
But you're kind of right.
Okay.
It's
which is fine. If I watch that kind of show, I will actually totally get into it.
It's actually from the History Channel.
Mm-hmm.
And
which means it's less realistic than most television.
Well,
and weirdly is, also about Hitler for some reason.
The thing is, the main character is not a person who we
chip,
can
chip business.
Who we can nail down as an actual historical figure.
Okay.
It's almost like making a History Channel show about King Arthur. Almost. Not quite as bad as that, but kind of close. But, I mean, and also there's a lot of people I don't think appreciate how much we don't know about Nordic culture and things like that, you know.
Trish, your food is here. Feed you?
And to let me go to Target.
Oh, because they're actually going through. Yeah. Trish wants to go shopping, but work is in the way. I have one important question about Vikings. Do they have horns on their helmets?
No.
Nice.
But so there's a lot of, they have to fill in a lot of gaps. But from what I know of, which it I admit isn't a whole lot, they seem to do fairly good job of sort of authentically showing what it might have been like for Vikings in that period of time, which actually also portrays what it's like for a lot of, you know, Central and Western and Northern European people. You know what I'm saying? The material culture was very similar all the way around.
So they all have really bad teeth?
No. It's just, you know, it's just a, I don't know, it's just interesting to see the design of it, you know. Mm-hmm. And also a lot of the you know, not nothing close to 50%, but a good portion of the warriors are women, which is, you know, something in the historical record that is supposedly true of some Scandinavian cultures.
Mm.
They're pagan, so they try to portray certain pagan beliefs and practices, which, you know, of course, they have to make a lot of that up, but it's pretty interesting. You know, there's a couple characterizations and casting decisions that are really annoying, but there's a lot of pretty good stuff in it. But but because it's kind of mostly about a somewhat fictional character, it doesn't bother me as much as, say, there was another historical. Oh, we've been watching Turn also. I think that's on AMC.
Yes. Loyal Listeners Coffee and Neuroduck watch that show and adore it.
But I find
he's about to crush your dreams, guys.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I find that one a little more annoying because we know a lot more about the actual history going on there, and they play so fast and loose with it. It's a little bit.
I think the way annoying. You really appreciate it is come off of watching Sleepy Hollow. which worked really hard to get all the historical stuff right it could, but is such a crazy premise that it can't do that much.
Well, you know, I generally have a problem with something that's based on, that takes something that actually happened and turns it into entertainment. Just that kind of bothers me. But then to have no problem switching things around and changing things and, oh, I like another show.
You're going to hate my book then.
Another show is Salem.
Yeah.
We've watched that and we continue to watch it because some of the performances are really good. But that's another example of something that really happened. In this case, a tragic thing. And they're turning it into entertainment by completely switching around everything that happens. It just makes me wonder, with Turn and with Salem both, you could just create a fictional place, borrow things from history for building your plot and stuff, but use a fictional place and fictional names, and that would work just as well. Nobody's going to care if this place or these people actually exist.
It would take a cultural shift around here, because people there is absolutely a demographic of people who are watching Salem because they were told there was a show about the Salem witch trials, and they were like, oh, that sounds interesting. So, whereas if they'd been told there's a new fantasy show, they would not have.
So it really is as cynical as a marketing thing.
I think absolutely. Well,
because that's what it seems like, and that bothers me.
And one argues also an artistic laziness at the center, definitely at the fringes, but the center of the entertainment industry.
Well,
because we need a story. Well, we've already kind of got one. Because that's the thing. It's horribly inaccurate, but in part that's because it's based off of a publicly held and inaccurate view of how that went. Like, misinformation about the Salem witch trials, even amongst my friends who, like, made it their business to know, has been amazing to me.
Okay, but you say laziness, but they're still doing research. I mean, they're pulling some obscure names
from
the history.
Yeah, but I don't mean laziness in terms of, like, work done. I mean laziness in terms of creativity. If you do, you can look shit up and write it down and say that's what we'll do, as opposed to having to come up with your own idea.
But they often change so much. I mean, they're not. What I'm saying is that it would take very little work for them to call the town something else, to call the people something else. And since they're mostly changing all of this history and stuff anyway, it would be really the same amount of work. It's the only thing left, though, is what you just said, is, oh, it's a marketing thing.
People, which I definitely think.
People are sucked in by this idea that they're watching
history. And people like familiarity. What's the show about? It's the Salem witch trials. In their head, at least partially, they're like, I know what that is. If you're like, what's this about? And, well, actually, that's the thing I'll get to when I talk about my book. What's it about is a odd little question.
Well, we haven't watched any, like, major. It seems like we watched some movies and they weren't very good. We saw this film called The Forest.
Oh, yeah, which I think is a remake of an earlier film by the same title. I was trying to figure that one out.
It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't that good.
Yeah, I read the thing on it because it wasn't getting particularly great reviews. And it's interesting. Once again, it's one of those that I'm like, this would have been a good episode of The Outer Limits or something. It didn't need to be its own film.
Well, we just got, from Netflix, we got, there's this 3-disc set of, someone made this TV movie or whatever, based on Arthur C. Clarke's Childhood's End, so.
Oh, yeah, that was on Sci-Fi, I think.
Did you watch it?
No.
Well, we're going to see if it's any good.
They aren't super good at advertising. There's a certain type of thing they're not really good at advertising, and it seems to be often miniseries that I'm actually interested in, because frequently I accidentally find out about it when I'm strolling through the guide one evening, and I show Sci-Fi showing the final episode of whatever it was.
Yeah, we'll watch. Hopefully. I mean, I won't be able to talk about it next week, because we're recording two tonight, but.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, not a lot going on. What about you? And if you're going to talk about your book, that'd be awesome.
If you do have nothing to talk about, I suppose I can try and fill the time. I only got a couple things to talk about. But yeah, first we have to talk about Fallout.
Okay.
More specifically about Thunderdome. Because there have been things there that hijinks have ensued.
Really?
Yes. So
how has my robot served you? That's what I want to know.
Actually, that may come up later in the story. Mostly, she just stands there, or floats there, rather, because it's a Mr. Handy Thruster.
Mm-hmm.
The other ones, like, patrol and stuff, She doesn't seem to. She sings it. But I gave her an Assaultron voice, and it's a little bit freaky because she sounds like that Cleo in Good Neighbor saying, I'm ready to serve. It freaks me out. Anyway, well, it doesn't help that Beatrice and Abby have the same voice, too. I need to fix that. But we're getting way inside baseball here, people. All right, anyway. So, Thunderdome is largely constructed. Basically, at this point, the issue involves wiring. Because in order to have things fight, I have to open their cages. And you open their cages by cutting the power. And I don't want to stand in there and do that. And alternatively, since I put cages on different sides, so I'm going to have Thing A and Thing B fight each other. I run over, open Thing A. Then I have to run back and open Thing B. That seems unfair. I should. So I'm like, I'm going to wire these up in switches. And I can, you know, just flip them all from the same place and all this. So I started working on that, and it's really boring.
Well, so can't you hook two cages up to the same switch?
Yes, but see, every bout, it's not, my plan here is not just to have bouts where I just open everything.
Oh, I thought there were only two.
One. I'm like, no, there's tons.
Okay.
At the moment, I've got one big one, which is Mirelurk, and then I got a bunch of little ones. I got a Gunner, I got a Raider, I got a Mole Rat, I got a Mutant Hound. The only reason I don't have the rest is it takes certain bait, and in some of those, I don't really have that right now. But anyway, so one morning, I'm doing this, I'm getting bored with this. Trish is in there too, and I'm like, screw it, let's do a fight. We've got things trapped in cages, we've got the place built, let's just do one, see how it looks. So something's going to fight the Mirelurk, possibly a succession of things is going to fight the Mirelurk. I haven't decided yet, but it's the big thing, so you know, it's the champion, and the challengers have to go up against it. So I go, and I cut the power to the Mirelurk cage, and then I'm talking to Trish, I'm like, okay, what should we have fight it? What do you think we should do? And I look at the screen, and I'm seeing its life bar going down really fast, and it died in like 3 seconds. And I couldn't figure out what was going on. I'm like, did the automated turrets like turn on it?
Well, did your companions start shooting at it, or one of your robots?
That's what it turned out. So in my wandering all over the place to set up wires and stuff, poor little Beatrice... Beatrice 86, I believe. My little pink robot was trying to follow me around, and she was on the arena floor when it opened. And just the other day, I upgraded her like right arm to a Gatling laser.
And she just killed that thing right now.
Wiped it out just immediately. So, reset, go to work, whatever. That night, I'm playing again. Trish is in there, and we're like, okay, I sent her away. I actually sent her to a different settlement. Because I'm like, I don't trust her. So nobody's around. So we're going to do this. All right? All right. So, I go back. And I'm not even thinking about the other. We just open the Mirelurk cage. And we're I'm up on the third level where the scaffolding is temporarily. And so I'm up there watching. And it comes out. And nothing's killing it. That's a good sign. But then I hear noises that, because I've put hundreds of hours in this game, I recognize of turrets adjusting and starting to spin up. And I'm like, crap, the defenses are... And then something shoots me.
Shoots you?
Me. And I'm like, what? And I look down, and there's a dude in there. And I finally, like I said, it's the gunner from the cage. I'm like, how did he get it? I didn't turn off his. He's on the whole other side. And then there's other things out, and things are shooting. And I don't know. So I finally just went down there, killed everything. Because that's how you reset. Just kill everything that is shooting at me. So I do this. And by the time it's done, every cage was open. And everything was now dead, either by me or by one of the other ones.
How'd they get open, though?
Well, here's the thing. Remember I told you it was all about wiring?
Sure,
yeah. And you open the cage by cutting the power.
Right.
Well, I had them on their own generators. I didn't have them because I didn't want to wire them up and it's close by. So next to each one was their little generator. In a fight, somebody might accidentally...
harm the generator, yeah.
And then the power goes
That's
out.
That's right.
And the cage opens
Exactly.
Up.
Well, who was hurting the generator?
I don't even know, because it spiraled, because somebody hurt the one that had the gunner in it. The gunner came out, he's got a gun, hence the name, so he's shooting things, and he shot a different one. Like, all the generators were broken by the end. I don't even know. So I'm going to have to either reposition all my turrets, cause that thing is heavily fortified, because I've had issues, or, as my coworker Josh says, set it up on a different power line so I can, like, power down all the turrets before a fight and then power them after. I don't know. And I think all the generators are going to have to be up on the scaffolding, which will have to stay. And then I have to do all the other wiring. And when I was a kid, I always liked building Legos, but I didn't play with them for very long. So I have a feeling Thunderdome is on its way out. I'm not even sure I'll get to that point.
So we haven't built anything like this. But in the demos, you know, in the little video demos they showed, there were, like, people in the stands cheering on fighters and stuff. Can you get people to do that?
Well, I have a theory.
Okay.
But it's not based on much. So there are a couple new devices you can build in the building system that aren't cages or anything. And one is they call it a beta wave emitter or something. It's something that if you have it there, the animals that come out of the cages will be tame.
Yeah, there's also something you can get people in your settlement to, like, quit their...
To relax, is what it says. Yeah, that's the thing. You put that out, and it's supposed to give the signal to your settlers to relax. And my thought is, because that means nothing in the game as it currently is. Like, that's not, oh, then we do, like, and because this was specifically designed to do this, I'm wondering if that makes them stop working, and if something is going on, they will come over to see.
Mm.
But I don't know. It also could just be the whole, you know, not actual game footage shown bullshit. Who knows? I'm quickly losing interest, though.
Did you know that if you capture a cat and release it into a settlement, it contributes to the happiness of your settlement?
I did not.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I did not.
We didn't either.
I like that you can, catch them now, because there were other ones, and I always wanted to get them, and I couldn't get them. Including the one on the Brotherhood of Steel ship. Like, he and I glitched in some really weird ways. All right. So, you sure you don't want to wait till next week to talk about my book?
We could. I mean,
no, I'm just messing with you.
Because it's not that long for me to wait, really. It's not a whole week.
No, but for them.
I suppose.
For our adoring fans. So, that continues. It's definitely going slower. But I'm about... I didn't do any today, so like I told you yesterday. Last night. I'm at just a little over 9,000 words. And I'm probably... I mean, the chapters... I've picked the chapters where it feels right narratively. I don't know in the final thing if that's how it'll be divided. But
understood.
Based on that, I think I'm like right in the middle of chapter 5. Which currently is the first real exposition dump. And it's fun to try and figure out, like, how to
do that without it seeming work. Like that's what it is.
Yeah. And at the point I paused, which was now a couple days ago, I guess, I was uncertain of what was going to happen next, sort of picking between a couple of things. Like, this part of the plot could happen, or this plot that I've been playing with. But neither really felt right here. And so I've been waiting, and then there are times. And for some reason, the best time seems to be right when I go to lay down to go to sleep.
Mm.
All the ideas come. And it used to be ideas for tweets. I don't know why. Nowadays, though, it's ideas for the book. And I had several, including at least one that I almost think changes the genre.
Mm-hmm.
It's still fantasy, but I feel like it's not the same subset of fantasy that it was if I use it. And then just a couple other things that I thought were really cool, and things, my big one is, you know, I'm creating premise and setting. I need to come up with some conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And so some stuff that I feel like ties into that. Weirdly, it's morphing more into an idea that I think would make a good TV show. What I do is I didn't write them down or anything. I wait, and in the morning, which ones do I remember and do they suck? And I think I remembered pretty much everything this time. And maybe half of them didn't suck. But I do think this is going to make a substantial change to the way I was thinking it was going to go. Make it a very different sort of book, I think. And definitely solve some of the issues that I was talking with you about in email. I feel like it's going to be too short.
Mm.
The way the story was going. This can help that a lot.
I see. Okay.
And just recently, I did, I hate to say it, I took some notes.
Why is that bad?
Because that's not how I've been doing it. It's not part of my process.
Oh, okay.
And because, like I said, I'm trying not to sort of counter my normal behavior, and my normal behavior doesn't take notes. But I've got a scant handful of ideas now that I really like and that aren't ones that I can immediately, like, it'll come up later. So I was like, I just need to, and I mean, it's tiny. It's, you know, it's like three little 5-word phrases or something. Mm-hmm. It's just so I don't lose those. Mm-hmm. And by the time it comes up, I may look at them and be like, oh, that's dumb.
Right.
But I was just like, I don't want to be like, I had a cool idea 2 months ago. You know? So, because that would suck. But that's pretty much it. I mean, I've watched some really dumb movies, but nothing. I watched a movie the other night that I'm still trying to figure out if it was really good or really not good. Like, it's, they tried some things, and I can't decide yet if I think they did well. It was a definite horror movie, and it was very clearly sort of low budget. It didn't have a homemade feel, but it had like a successful Kickstarter feel.
Yeah.
And it was a, part of the problem also is it was a horror comedy. And that gets really tricky because it's like, did they do that on purpose? Is it funny either way? And is it less funny if you know it was on purpose? You know, like with any satire situation,
right.
You're like, that's funny if they did it sincerely, but if they knew that's what they were doing, it's not. So there's a big line there, but it's basically random sad sack character ends up getting this invite to a murder party, and it's Halloween, so it's a Halloween party, so he ends up going, and the party's actually just, they just threw out random invites to places because they're going to kill somebody, and this was how to get victims in, and he's the only one who showed up, and it's all these people who are going to kill him for a variety of reasons. But then it really kind of gets into that in weird ways, where it gets into why everybody's there and how they came up with this. At one point, we have, I'll be honest, it's like a drug trip thing, but part of the conceit of it is that it's some sort of drug, everybody took it, and it's essentially like a truth serum. And so then you get into this whole scene of murderers and would-be murderers just sort of like confessing things about themselves, and that gets very odd. It gets really trippy, and that's the thing. I can't tell if it's just pretentious or if it's really interesting. To me at the time it was, but you know, it's the middle of the night, who knows? And so that got kind of fun. I felt like it was an interesting, if sort of sophomore attempt to get into the minds of killers, you know. And at the same time was kind of funny because there's also the character of the victim, and he's there. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the relationship's adversarial, sometimes it's almost cooperative. And then at the same time, this is definitely a horror movie. It has some serious gore in it, and there was no jump scares. Awesome right there.
Okay.
Zero jump scares. I appreciate it personally, and also it's a sign of not lazy filmmaking. But meanwhile, when the gore happened, it was often very sudden and very brutal, such that a few times I was like, oh, wow, like I did not see that coming.
Hmm.
And I appreciate that there was not a lot of telegraphing. And it did get really, really heavy on the gore, just to warn anybody who's interested. There's some definite fucked up stuff. And I would say actually the effects were pretty good. All practical. And low budget, but pretty ingenious for being low budget.
Hmm.
So it's called Murder Party. I got it on Amazon Prime, but I think I might have got it through an add-on subscription. I don't know. But I kind of think it's worth checking out. It is one of those where if you look at the credits, you see the same last names a whole lot. What did Ezzy do? Falling into the closet. All right. Yeah, so you can check that out. I think that's all I got.
Okay.
I watch too many bad movies these days. Like, it plays in my mind. I start analyzing them. compared to other terrible movies I've seen. It gets weird.
Well, I suppose we could start drawing things out of the hat.
Probably. Hmm. You got the hat.
Yeah, it's right over here.
Is that the same Star Wars cap you wore last time, or is that a different Star Wars cap? Same. No, it still says myth. So.
Same one. It's from a...
documentary, I assume.
No.
Oh!
An expo. Kind of a... It was a traveling...
Oh, one of the seasonal Museum of Science and Industry displays.
Kind of. But, I mean, it was going all over the country, and what it was... This was, gosh, 15 years ago. It was a display of Star Wars artifacts, some stuff that was in the movie and stuff like that. But each piece, each display, had a plaque, or I guess a sign, you know, mm-hmm. that talked about this element in the movies as it applied to Joseph Campbell's hero's journey.
Oh, ho, 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 ho. Did you make this display?
The show was, or I don't know, what do you want to call it? I mean, it was in the...
Exhibition.
I guess we went to Chicago to see it, but it was various places, and it was called Star Wars, The Power of Myth is what it... And there's a book that comes with it, which I have at home, which is excellent.
Are you sure it wasn't called Star Wars, The Power of Myth, comma, William?
No.
By the way, there is a character in my book named William already.
Great.
I don't know. I can't in the end. I have some issues with names in my book, actually, that I'm like, some of this may be tricky later. But for the moment, there is one who weirdly kind of looks like an idealized version of me, but I named William. It's very odd.
But this was a great exhibit. I mean, there was stuff from the film, stuff that was actually used in the film, and the little placards or cards or whatever were very interesting, and the book is great.
But I got, seriously, this is you. This was target marketing at you.
I got this hat and a T-shirt and everything. Like I said, about 15 years ago. It was really good.
In between episodes, I'm going to show you a SNL sketch about Star Wars merchandise.
Okay.
Reminds me of our conversation right now.
Coffee has an important question.
Coffee has become the question version of Jazz on the blog. Like, other people pop in, but she owns it, you know?
What is worse?
Generally, it's something bad, and then something else is more bad.
It's not would you rather. Would it's just what is worse.
That's, yeah, but that's what I think.
Experiencing failure.
Oh, there's more. Okay.
What is worse, experiencing failure or never taking on the challenge? Seems like we had a question like this not long ago.
I just assumed it, she just said, what is worse? Yeah.
Of course.
This came up in our whole fear of failure.
Yeah, it kind of depends. But of course, in general, my approach is, I would sooner try at something and fail than wonder, you know, later if I could have succeeded at it. And of course, I also find a lot of benefit in trying something even if I fail. I mean, you know.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So to me the fact that I might fail at something is almost a non-issue, mm-hmm. because that's really kind of beside the point. The point is, you know, you try, and if you don't succeed, well, something good came of it. But if you do succeed, then great. And if you just don't try at all, well, then you have failed in a way, I guess. But. That's, I guess, my opinion about it.
I think you're wrong. And for the first time ever, I'm even going to say, I'm not saying I think your answer is incorrect. I think I believe what you just said is not actually what you believe. Or okay. What your opinion is. And I'll tell you why. Right. Because this question, which Coffee did not invent, I mean, she worded it and it's lovely written and all that. But I mean, this idea has been the premise of 70% of the live-action Disney films. I mean, just this has been around forever and ever. Sure. Every after-school special is this kind of thing or whatever. And it's a dumb question. It's a useless question. Because here's the thing.
Okay.
If the option was to try or experience a failure in which your wife died, depending on what you were trying, you totally might say, you know what? I'm not even going to try.
Well, I mean, that's kind of taking the question outside of
I feel like this requires, I think what you're describing and what she's asking, essentially, is a very limited subset of this idea, and I think we need to acknowledge that, because otherwise it becomes kind of psychotic life advice.
I suppose, but, I mean, how limited, though? I mean...
Well, it's easy. I just put in more axes. So, to try versus failure, it is very strongly influenced by what the risk of failure is and what the significance of the act you are attempting is. So, if there is a high risk and it's not something... And I even have this in this situation. I'll have times where I did something. I participated in a competition or whatever, and I'll lose, and it's disappointing, but I'll also realize that some stupid reason, I wasn't even interested in this. Like, if I had won, I wouldn't have cared, and I didn't enjoy it. Why the hell did I do this? Because of some other external force. So, I mean, I think it's a very strong... The answer to this question is always, it depends on what the thing is worth, and it depends on what I'm risking when I'm risking failure.
Well, sure, of course that's true. But
but this always drives me insane when people are like, is it better to try? And the answer is, it's an incredibly singular and subjective thing to each individual experience for each individual person.
Yeah, I agree that's true.
Now, if we're talking in terms of where the only risk of failure, which I think a lot of these are looking bad or not, you know, not being lauded or whatever. When it's only your personal ego or face or even your time and effort, potentially, within reason, then I'm absolutely with you that better to try.
Well, I grant that I was putting a great deal of interpretation into what the question was actually asking, as applying to specific things from, but I don't think narrowly specific. I mean, I think on a day-to-day basis, we're faced with challenges and we can try or not try. In terms of a broader question of the project of our lives, you know, writing a book, for example,
mm-hmm.
It seems to me that I'm not going to run into very many situations where one of the consequences of my trying something is that it's a life or death situation. I'm not personally going to run into that very often. You know, most of the challenges that I'm faced with are going to be...
Yes, but there's plenty of things. You're going to go to a party or something, somebody's going to offer you a beer. Would you rather try it and determine that you don't like it, or rather not try?
But see, we've already established how I'm just not even interested.
Which is exactly one of my axes, because the experience of having the beer is of no value to you. So there's no point in risking anything, because it's...
But that seems like it takes that experience out of the context of the whole question.
Because I don't think so, because some people would accept it anyway, because they would worry about the impropriety.
Some people would, but there's no challenges. I mean, the question specifically mentions a challenge. This doesn't... Someone offering me something that I don't even care about is not a challenge.
Okay, I would disagree. Anything that I believe carries any risk, I think, is. And in that one, it is a social risk, but there is still some. There could be consequences of you refusing.
Even if I'm not considering them, or I don't think that there are, really? I mean, there's always consequences in a solipsistic sense, but like significant enough that it really matters if I give it thought.
No, but see, that's the thing I'm saying here. There are consequences. Just like in that every action has a reaction.
Sure.
There are consequences. A major factor in here is how much you value them.
But a consequence is not by necessity a risk.
No, but that is a subjective issue. There are some people who would say, I don't want to risk offending this person.
Oh, I see.
You would not. I would not. Most people would not. That's a kind of weird one, but you could be into it, you know.
Okay, sure.
And especially depending on who it is. And that's what I'm saying, is it is quite, each, not even for each individual person, for each individual experience, and just the random shit of the lights blinking, don't walk, I'd like to get across faster. Do you do it or do you not? And it depends on how important is it to me to get there faster, how big a risk do I think it is that those cars are coming, or how much do I value the law? Because some people just won't do it because they're like, it's the law, I don't want to be that person.
But something like that seems like a very different sense of the term challenge. Like, you know, there's a risk involved in doing what you're talking about, but is it really a challenge? Have you really succeeded at something if you cross a street without getting run over by a car? I think
it's an issue of scale. I entirely think it's an issue of scale. Is it an incredibly insignificant challenge? Yes, but it's still there. I would still term it a challenge.
Well, again, I fully acknowledge that, you know, my answer was based on a very particular interpretation of the question, which was about, you know, challenges in life that where the prospect of failure is a potential thing that is going to prevent you from doing the thing. And not failure in the sense of someone's going to get hurt, but just failure in the sense of failure. Just that it won't happen or it won't work out. Like, I guess I took it just like our previous question about a fear of failure. Does your fear of failing at writing a book, for example?
Yeah. If we put this in a context of some sort of creative expression, I think
project.
Everything is right. I want to make the distinction because I feel like the media does not. I feel like our stories, things like that, people have turned this into a platitude where if somebody were to think, huh, should I? The answer is always, yeah, better to try and fail.
You mean like that movie what's his name? It was called Yes Man. Who was in it?
Probably Jim Carrey.
Yeah. That film was all about, he was going to say yes to things instead of no.
Yeah.
And you get what they're saying, you know.
Yes.
But at the same time, you reflect on the whole premise of it, it seems actually a little bit stupid. You don't want to say yes to
and that's the same
which I'm
thing
sure in
here.
The film they kind of covered that too, but it's just in general, it seems like a silly thing.
If a dude offers me heroin at a party, oh, I could risk having a real bad time, but it's better to have the experience and learn from it, and maybe it'll be awesome. I've heard of heroin can be awesome.
Sure, sure.
You know, or just, you know what? It's the same goddamn follow your dreams thing. You know what? I'm trying to write a novel. I'm even getting my hopes up. I'm totally going to become rich and famous. I'm going to be the next J.K. Rowling. But you know what I didn't do? Quit my paying job because I'm going to be the next J.K. Rowling. Okay. And I feel like that's a thing where people are convinced that that's the only way they could do it.
Yeah.
And so they're like, should I try or not? Well, it depends on a whole lot of other factors.
Right, right. Here's another thing that came up in some stories that my wife and I had recently seen. A series of stories in a television show where a recurring theme is you don't give up on people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no matter how much they might let you down, you don't give up on people. And the way the message is presented is the worst advice ever because some people...
There are definite times when you need to
give
up on
people.
Yes,
they're abusive toward you. They're you know, you are enabling them. Whatever changes they need to make in life, you're not going to be the one to help them do that because you are an object in their life that they will never see as another human being, and you're not doing yourself
yes.
or anyone else any favors.
And what they're trying to say is have empathy for everyone and don't be a shitty person who abandons folks.
Right off.
Which is totally good.
Yeah, the first moment someone lets you down.
Yes, yes. And be willing to, you know, care and come back. Don't just dismiss people out of hand when they have disappointed
exactly,
you or whatever.
Exactly, exactly.
But that's far too nuanced. And it's the same thing. The question you answered is the question Coffee was asking.
Well,
not
so,
necessarily
yeah.
the... I am confident. Sorry, I can't actually read her mind. I am confident that is the question she was asking, largely in a sense of a creative and even potentially social endeavor where the primary issue of failure is it didn't come out the way I wanted, it never got done, I found out I I'm not talented enough to do that, whatever. Mm-hmm. In those situations, I agree with you. In principle, I'm lazy. That's another factor in there. But I agree with you. Absolutely better to try it and fail. And that's how you learn so many things. Like, once you've done it once. I've got a thing coming up. I'm going to be leading a major series, like 2-day series of meetings to do a thing. And I'm facilitating it, and I'm really freaked out about it, and I think I might really fuck it up. But the other thing is, I'm super confident that the next time I do it, it'll probably go fine, regardless of whether this one goes great or bad, because we just don't have any context. So once I've gone through the experience, even if I go through the experience and ruin it and set fire to the building, like, just awful, I will have known what the experience is and been like, at this part, take the gasoline-soaked rags outside. At this part, make sure everybody has a chair. At this part, bring... So, like, I'm looking forward to failing this time. And if I don't fail, and it's just awesome, that's cool, that's lucky. I mean, or that means I happen to be really good at it, or whatever. Yeah. But the point is, either way, it's so much better than saying, I'm not going to do it.
Well, I think...
Which, at one point, I theoretically had the option to say that.
I think...
I'm too far committed.
I've been blessed in my life.
Hashtag blessed.
To have certain experiences.
You know what scares me worst about what I just said? Not the dumb joke and reference to you. When I said it, I don't know if you noticed, I did this.
Yeah.
Which I don't even know that that's a thing, but now I'm doing it. I'm doing finger signs of hashtags, people. I'm scared.
But this might be true for you too, is I learned long ago, I don't even remember when I learned it. But it's. But I've noticed that not everybody knows how to make this distinction, but I learned a long time ago the difference between what I was afraid to do and what I didn't want to do.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that don't know the difference.
No.
And they think if they're afraid to do something, they don't want to do it, so they don't do it. But I learned a long time ago, well, I just don't want to do this thing.
Yeah.
But this thing here, it's not an issue of whether I even want or don't want. I'm afraid to do it. And in those situations, I almost feel compelled to do it just to face the fear so that it isn't an issue with me down the road.
I often am like that too, except here's a big difference. I won't say that I can tell the difference necessarily, because that's what happens, is stuff I don't realize that's what's going on until something forces me. And it's not common. I'd say with most things, I can tell. But then there are times that they're like, why don't you want to do that? And I'll be like, blah, 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 blah. And they'll say stuff back, and eventually I'll be like, oh, it might be that.
Well, I mean...
And I do feel like, not that it always has to be about this, but there was some of that with me writing a book.
Mm.
Recent things have caused me to have a little more faith in my ability to do it. And in the process, I realized that, I mean, part of it, and this is a huge one for me, is sometimes the cost is just the effort, regardless of the success. So it's like, it's going to take work. Is it going to be worth it? I don't know. But, and that was a lot of what this has been. But just recently, I think that may have covered up some insecure fear that I would try it and fail it. And then I've always been going to be an author. So the idea that maybe if I try and fail, and then I can be like, couldn't be an author, you know, like...
Yeah, that you transform into something else.
Exactly. I still have the potential until I try and fail.
That's interesting. Do you think that in the mind of most people, a person's status is better as someone who's going to do something but hasn't done it yet, rather than someone who tried to do it and... couldn't do it?
Within their own minds, I think it's very common. I don't know. I haven't been in very many minds, just a few.
But that sounds like something
and
generally
again,
people would
there's
think.
A lot of movies about it, so. and it ties into the whole idea, you know, I feel like I've done it if I tell you I'm going to, you know, that whole thing again. There's, as long as you've got potential, success is still an option. Once you have failed, at least in that attempt, success is no longer an option because you have failed. And people don't like to have to try things more than once.
Oh, well.
So if
I try things
if
lots
I'm,
of times.
If I'm John Q. Public, I try and write a book. I do it. I edit it. I think it's good. I give it to a publisher or somebody, and they're like, not even close. In my mind, as John, I can't be an author. Like, I suck at it. I'm done.
But of course.
Not the whole, I could learn more, I could study, I could try harder and do it again.
The vast, vast majority of people who have been successful authors, have it's on their 10th try of submitting a manuscript.
That's not going to be the case with me. First one is going to do it.
Okay.
Because I'm that good. Also, because there's not going to be a second one if the first one doesn't do it. But that's assuming there's a first one. But
well, and of course, I have very different standards of success than most people, I've noticed.
You have different standards of insert blank here than most people.
So, I mean, most of the time, I just have to feel like on the second and third attempt or whatever that I've had some kind of improvement. Where I've learned something about the process itself, even if my execution isn't exactly right. So, I wrote and self-published my own novels. I think anyone paying attention can tell that there was some improvement from one to the next. Did I ever get to the point where I was writing the kind of novel that was ever going to be a bestseller? I don't even know. That's not that important. But I did this enough times, and I was careful enough and thoughtful enough about it that I think I have a good grasp on what the process is like and what it would take for me to write that kind of novel if I ever try it again, which I might. I mean, I've got an idea for another novel that I didn't feel compelled to go right off and write, and I still don't because now I'm working on this other project. But I know if I do feel compelled to write it, I'll have all kinds of experiences and tools and all kinds of other things to help me make it, better than the first three were, and maybe it'll finally be that novel that is, good enough that either if I publish it myself, it'll go somewhere, or I could get someone else to publish it.
Wait until I become rich and famous, and I can help you get an.
Well, I'm just saying, I approach these things. I guess I don't think like you're talking about. Oh, I'm going to be rich and famous, or have these fantasies about what's going to happen. I just. I obviously I used a pseudonym because there was just the off chance or the distant, chance that something might happen, but that was not at the forefront of my mind at all.
Yeah.
And my main goals had to do with personal development and advancement and challenging my own fears and all this other stuff. So
I usually do that consciously. That's what I tell myself I'm doing. And then unconsciously I'm having all these fantasies about what's going to happen.
Well,
this time, in a weird shift that I don't even understand, I'm just going for it. I just have my hopes high. I'm going to be the next J.K. Rowling. It's going to be huge. It's going to be amazing.
Okay.
Blow things away. I don't know why. Normally, I try and pretend that I don't think that, to myself. I fool myself. But, yeah, not to
say. Well, it's not to say I don't fantasize about, I'd like to make a living, a better living than I'm making now doing what I do.
No, I'm going to be huge.
All of those things are there in my mind. And of course, everyone who tries to write books or TV shows or whatever, they fantasize about it, something being a success and being interviewed on some new show or whatever. But for me, that's so far down. I mean, it literally is so far down the list of things that I want from this that when it doesn't happen, it doesn't really even register. Mm-hmm. I just move on to the next thing.
It's interesting, you said you thought the books got better as they went on, because I agree and disagree. I absolutely noticed your writing was better by the third book. First book is still my favorite story of the three, far and away.
Well, I read the third one recently, when I couldn't sleep, I just picked it up.
The third one has great scenes. It is not my favorite story.
I liked... what I liked about it was one of the characters' stories, because I don't know if anyone else is like this who creates stuff, but just about everything I've ever created, whether it's music, I've written tons and tons of songs, I've written these books, essays and whatever. Sometimes when you go back to something you've created, you forget, you forget everything about it. And when you hear it or read it or see it or whatever, you know, it's like you're seeing something that someone else did. So as I read the story, you know, I had some problems with it, which of course I would learn in the next time I wrote something, but I really liked one of the characters' stories in particular, and it came out a lot better than I remembered it coming out.
Was it Todd? Because we all know that you're Todd.
No, this is the third.
Todd. Oh, Todd's the second, isn't he?
Yeah, he's in the second one.
Oh, sorry, you're Victor in the third one, aren't you?
No.
Is that the right name? You're one of the vampires. I don't mix them up.
But you also notice as you're reading it, and you have to remember all over again that, oh, I wrote this. You start to see yourself in the story in a way you didn't before. Mm-hmm. You start to see what parts of it are somewhat autobiographical that you didn't realize when you were first doing it.
A lot of the details of what I'm writing now are part from me and part from other people, and I'm doing a really weird mix. So there's definite autobiographical stuff, and then definite stuff I stole from other people's real lives, and then definite stuff that I stole from other books. We are, it's overtime, and we got another one of these
things. Oh, we are? Well, yeah. Okay.
Well, not so over, but we just hit over, and I was hoping to stop us earlier, because we got a second one to do, and I could only stand you for so long. So, everybody, wait a week, and we'll have another one of these, but we'll sound similar. Keep listening. Write the hat, please. More people, write the hat. Coffee, don't change what you're doing. It's wonderful, but other people need to step up, or it's going to be the coffee show, and we can't call it coffee talk because that's already taken. No big whoop. But, and remember, Keanu doing Keanu in Keanu.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.